We've seen it before, Friday prayers followed by demonstrations around the Middle East. And one might imagine U.S. Embassy personnel in the region are praying for their own safety today. Anti-American demonstrations are continuing around the region, especially in Cairo. And this week has underscored a level of uncertainty between the U.S. and Egypt that is a consequence of the changes during the Arab Spring, but has never seemed so tangible. The old U.S. brokered Camp David Accords that became the peace treaty between Egypt and Israel seems like it took place in the last century, which, of course, it did. It's a new world now, and this week the president described Egypt as neither an ally nor an enemy. Egypt's President Mohamed Morsi, after delaying his response and condemnation for the attack which killed the U.S. ambassador to Libya, and after what was described as a blunt 20-minute phone call from President Obama, finally spoke on national television declaring that Muslims have an obligation to protect the embassies and people of other nations who he described as guests. He condemned the killing of the U.S. ambassador and three other personnel in Libya, two of whom have been identified as Navy SEALs. Morsi called for peaceful protests, not the violent outbursts that have been seen throughout the region over that blasphemous film, Innocence of Muslims, produced in the U.S. and shared via internet all over the world. Secretary of State Hillary Clinton has called that film inflammatory and despicable. Nicholas Kristof joins us now from our partner, The New York Times, to speak about a week where the uneasy democracy of the Arab Spring has collided with an abundant and seemingly undiminished anger at the United States of America.
It seems to me that the kind of protests over the perception of the blasphemy in the U.S., whether it's in Yemen or in Bangladesh or Libya or Egypt, to some degree that's expected and that's going to happen periodically because there are going to be some nuts in the U.S. who are going to do something to inflame opinion. But I think what really troubled me about the whole episode was the reaction in Egypt of President Morsi and of the Muslim Brotherhood, and they blew it. The Muslim Brotherhood, as you know, initially put out a message in Arabic encouraging people to go protest in front of the U.S. embassy to defend Mohammed. And then after the attack on the embassy, President Morsi just went AWOL. He disappeared and waffled. And Libyan public opinion was overwhelmingly pro-American. The Libyan government, after the attack there, really came through, and people were so apologetic. In Yemen, the same thing happened. In Egypt, that didn't happen until they really got scared about the damage they were doing to the American relationship.
And violence is continuing in Cairo even today. Let's explore that a little bit. Is Morsi taking a cue from the Leadership Council in Egypt, which, of course, was responsible for the very much nationalistically motivated holding of those U.S. aid workers, accusing them of treason?
You know, I'm not sure about the internal dynamics in terms of how, you know, who's advising him, but I do think that part of what is going on is that the U.S. may be more of a bit player than we perceive. It seems to me that in a number of these countries, what is going on is that you have Salafis or other real Islamic extremists who feel that they kind of won this revolution, and now they've been marginalized. And there is a certain battle, I think, between those Salafi extremists and somewhat more moderate elements like the Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt, competing for public opinion in terms of who is better able to protect religious faith, who is better able to protect nationalistic patriotic values. And I think that to some degree, although the U.S. was obviously the nominal target in Egypt and in Libya, I think that in some ways the government itself was the target. People were trying to show that, oh, you know, we can do a better job than the government is of protecting our religious values.
So in a sense, it's a Taliban-like challenge where you have a fringe Islamist group that wants to sort of acquire a kind of populist platform with which to project its own national vision. Had a lot of trouble figuring that out in Egypt, but all of a sudden this blasphemous video becomes an opportunity for them to say, all right, this is our issue, and boom, they move forward.
That's right. I mean, I think that in both Egypt and Libya, you have extremists who feel that they took on a lot of sacrifices for the revolution, and then that they didn't benefit as much as they would have expected, that these days more secular elements have a lot of power in Libya, and that in Egypt, the Brotherhood, which they see as making way too many compromises, has risen to power, and they've been kind of left out in the street. And they, I think, saw this correctly as a real way to try to recover some of that public support.
You know, one of the things that concerns me is not to in any way excuse this violence or obviously the death of an American ambassador, but the U.S. in the past has been associated with reform movements or changes of governments that do suppress Islamist elements. I'm thinking of what happened in Algeria. I'm thinking, in a sense, the relationship between the U.S. and Hamas, which won an election in Gaza. Now, we can argue about that, but the question remains, do people rightly or wrongly blame the U.S. for possibly being complicit in these efforts to suppress Islamist groups in these Arab Spring reform movements?
They do, and they certainly have that legacy. And one of the reasons why extremists in a number of countries have this hostility to the U.S. is because in the past, when they were tossed in jail, they think, rightly, that the U.S. played some role in that. But, I mean, I think that there's also a profound misunderstanding in many Islamic societies about how the U.S. works. There is a perception. I mean, even now, if you ask, moderate people in many countries about this, they will, on the one hand, denounce the attacks on embassies. On the other, they will say, it's outrageous that the U.S. allows this kind of video to happen. And they will perceive some kind of hidden U.S. support for a video that they feel is extraordinarily offensive. And people sort of assume that in the U.S. it's a crime to burn a Bible or to engage in some other form of blasphemy. And they, so it feels to them as if the U.S. is picking on Islam.
Well, before we go, isn't there just some feeling of sadness looking at these pictures and feeling that the United States, no matter how sophisticated our analysis is of policy, can be so misunderstood in this violence and in these tragic deaths in Libya?
Oh, absolutely. And I mean, I think it's a reminder that the more democratic countries are going to be really tough and sometimes painful to deal with, that populist values that aren't always democratic are going to come to the fore and are going to play a greater role in public opinion. Sometimes we're going to have not liberal democracy, but illiberal democracy. This kind of outrage and violence and the pandering to it that you saw from President Morsi, I think, is a reflection of a much more difficult kind of diplomacy we're going to be engaging with in the region ahead.
Shall we call them autumnal themes in the Arab Spring there? Nicholas Kristof, thanks so much.
And my pleasure.